Welcome to Flogger Presents. I'm your host, Andrew Walmsley. In this show, we interview models, photographers, and publishers from the photography field. And today, we have a motorsport photographer who's going to teach us about panning, what it's like being on a track day, and why penguins are a man's best friend. So stay tuned and let's play the music. Welcome everybody to the latest Flogger Presents. I have with me a guest called Andrew Quartley, and he is from the world of motorsport. Hello, Andrew. How are you? Yeah, very good, thank you. Thanks a lot for joining in today. We appreciate that. Andrew's another person that I found from Instagram. Seeing some of the pictures, I was like, wow, these fascinate me. I've been dying to get someone in from the sort of motor industry. So, yeah, it was really good to come across you. No problem. So let's get to know Andrew a little bit. Where are you from and where did you grow up, this sort of thing?
I live in West Sussex. Yeah.
Okay.
I have done all my life. It's a lovely part of the world. And my interest in photography really started when I was about 13, 14 years old. And my dad lent me his Canon 300D and to take pictures of the Victory Car Run, which is a classic historical event which runs from London to Brighton. And
yes,
that was really where my love of photography started. I just love taking pictures in it, and it grew from there for a few years, really. And I did all sorts of photography, from self-portraits, floral photography, some studio stuff as well. And then I also did some product photography as part of my job after I left college. And after that, my interest sort of waned in it for a few years. And then it's only in the past year or so that I've really come back into photography. And that's really been triggered by me starting doing motorsports. That all started in July last year.
Right, okay. Yeah. So was that just photography, or was you already into doing something in the motorsport industry?
No, it was just from photography. I mean, I've loved motorsports all my life. I started watching Formula One when I was 6 years old. And I still follow it today. And yeah, I love all sorts of motorsports, like World Endurance Championship, British Touring Cars, some Rallycross as well.
That's cool. So did your dad actually do anything with his camera then, or was it just sort of like a home user?
He's been an amateur for quite a few years, since his early teens, and my granddad was actually an amateur photographer as well. So it's all in the family. And he still does some photography today.
Did they sort of instill this sort of film sort of thing in you then?
Film photography? No, because when I started doing photography, it was back in the early 2000s, so when digital was coming out. So the only time I've ever really used a film camera was at college, when we had to do some of our work, but I've used it entirely digital apart from that.
So you probably used quite early on digital stuff then, didn't you?
My first digital camera was a Fujifilm S9600, I think it was called. It was one of the early bridge cameras. It was pretty good for its time. It had about 3 megapixels, I think. By today's standards, laughable, really.
Okay. Well, I'm not much far in front of you. I think my main SLR is only 10 megapixels. It's not far off your era. No, that's cool. If I said to you then, have you had any people that have inspired you sort of in life, not just say photography, but just in life in general?
I'd say my father's been an inspiration for me, in the fact
Nice.
to do as best a job as you can in whatever you do in life, really, and always try and achieve
Okay.
as much as you can. Photography wise, of late I've been inspired by the likes of Darren Heath, Jamie Price, and Vladimir Reese, who are some of the top motorsport photographers. Their work is just amazing. I mean, especially Vladimir Reese, his use of colour in his panning shots is just incredible.
Right.
And those guys inspire me, definitely.
I think that's good though, isn't it? That there's always someone better than you, so you keep pushing and aiming high.
That's true.
I think everyone needs that, and I think even in life, like you're saying about your dad, I think these things are important for us to keep going. So what motivates you to keep going then?
I'd say to keep on improving in my photography, really, and to take like that great shot. Like trying to take that perfectly composed, lovely image, which is what you strive for really in most photography. But yeah, eventually I'd love to become an F1 photographer. I think that's like the ultimate dream for me.
Right.
But I know that's really
Right, okay. So that's no, because why
I could
not?
do,
You're
yeah.
so early into your career. I mean, Jesus, that's definitely something to aspire to.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate dream.
Is that a speed thing, or what's really so great then about F1 versus, say, touring car sort of thing?
It's just I've loved it since I was young, really. Since I was 6 years old, I've followed it,
Right.
and it's the racing which I love the most, really. It's the speed of the cars, which is amazing. I mean, I went to see them at a British Grand Prix 2 years ago, and the speed they went around Silverstone is pretty mind-blowing.
No, I'm pretty sure that. Have you seen, have you been to a lot of these
I've
tracks
been to
then?
quite a few. I've been to Brands Hatch is my local one. It's about an hour's drive away from me.
Wow, that's good.
I've been to Lyddon Hill, which is a rallycross circuit. It's about a 2 hour drive from me. And I've been to Croft,
Okay.
Buxton,
Ah, yeah.
and that's about it, yeah, so far. Oh, and Donington as well, actually.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah, I've been to most of the major ones.
Some top tracks there, isn't there? So, would you say your plan is to get into F1, or have you got steps you want to go through?
I want to do it step by step, really. I mean, our first step was to get media accreditation, which I've done earlier this year, thanks to
Oh, wicked.
MSV, because I'm now working as a track day photographer for them, which all started
No.
at the end of last year, because the motorsport season finished about November, October, and I started taking pictures of track days. And I was uploading onto the track day Facebook group, which you're not really supposed to do, because for those images, if you're taking them by yourself, they're only for private use. So I was contacted by
Okay.
MSV, told to take them down unless I wanted to pay X amount for the license of the images, which I inquired about,
Okay.
and then they said you wouldn't want to do that because it's so much, but what we could do is we could offer you an opportunity to try out being a track day photographer for us, which I did at the end of
Wow.
January, and it went really well. I really enjoyed it, and yeah, I've done it 5 times since, and yeah, it's my part-time job at the moment, so it's going pretty well.
Oh, that's amazing, because I mean, that's only like a month ago, isn't it? Two months ago.
Yeah, I've been doing it for about a month and a half.
Crikey. So this could be an interesting one for the future then. I had a sort of similar conversation with someone a few months ago where we said we ought to check back in a year and see what's changed. Because you could be anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some other plans for this year as well. I'm working for a small magazine. It involves doing some static car shoots for them and also doing some motorsport photography as well. And I'm also in discussions with a smallish motorsport publication about covering some events for them later this year. And it's quite a variety of events across the UK, so that's exciting.
Wow, that sounds really good. So that's all from you being cheeky on Facebook.
Only tribute to the MSV track day photography job that I've got. Yeah,
right. Okay.
These other two opportunities came from what happened is also at the end of last season. I emailed pretty much every racing series team and race organization that I could find, saying, would you like me to do some motorsport photography for you for next season? And most of them either said no or I didn't get any response from. But the ones that did have come back to me, and that's how I've got these opportunities of working for.
That's interesting, isn't it? So there is something to just emailing people. Because you just assume that no one has a chance anymore. You know, I think people have been there before you. Yeah, but
I mean, it is really competitive motorsport photography, and just getting a first accreditation is an achievement. Yeah.
Okay, so talk about this accreditation then, Andrew. What's involved with it?
You mean how do you get it? Okay.
Yeah, how did you get it? What does it actually involve, and what does it gain you?
Well,
sort of
basically,
thing?
It gains you access to working trackside, so you don't have any fences blocking your view. You can walk around taking pictures, and it's quite a big advantage compared to being on the spectator side of a fence where you're blocked by all fences and other stuff. In terms of getting it, you have to really work for a publication of some sort, or work for an organisation. That's probably the best way to start doing it.
Yeah. That's interesting. So, talk us through what's involved on a track day session for you then, because I'm coming in with virtually no experience. I've actually never been to a track as well. Nice to one day. But
a track day is basically it's quite a variety of cars that drive around the circuit. The circuit's open all the time, so the cars can go out whenever they want. You get a variety. Right. I mean, I saw somebody once in a Volvo Estate driving around.
he shot that on purpose, obviously.
Anything from that to club racing cars, like Radicals, Caterhams, etc. I arrive at the circuit about 8 o'clock, attend this driver's briefing, and then go out on track for 9. And then I go around the circuit taking pictures of all the cars going around, and I try and get quite a variety of different shots. So I try wide angle close up pictures, etc. And then there's a 1 hour lunch, and then I finish shooting at about 4 o'clock, although a track day can finish about 5:30. The reason for that is I need to finish doing the images by about 5 o'clock the next day, really. ideally.
Right.
So I go home and edit the images until about 10 o'clock and then wake up early the next day and edit them until they're done. When I say it...
Oh, that's quite a fast turn.
When I say edit, what I actually mean is just go through the images and delete the ones which aren't any good.
Yeah.
Because we don't actually have any time for editing.
Okay.
Yeah. And we produce easily over 1,000 images for each day. So the hit rate has to be very high for them.
But then the speed of what you're shooting, it's not like you're shooting a model who stood still, so 1,000 shots would be stupid. I mean, give us an example, how many cars you would shoot on one day then?
I believe it's about 40 cars altogether. And I try and get about 30 images of each of them, so around about that number.
I mean, surely most photographers is 80% rubbish. So you must be quite up there nailing your shots to get a few.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment I'm taking around 7,000 to 8,000 images each day. And I get around 1,500 at the end of it.
Yeah.
So that's about 30%, is it really?
That's
about that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's not important, the percent, is it? It's because if you get a great shot, you get a great shot. That's all you care about, isn't it? But I think it's just consistency with you shooting something so fast. It's not like you can say, can you just go back there a second? And then you're not got a radio to him. Just reverse up there, lads, please, a minute.
Interestingly, actually, because one other task MSB wanted me to do, this is about 2 weeks ago now, which I never done before, mm-hmm. is they wanted me to take some pictures out the back of a moving van going around Brands Hatch for a racing series, which was
quite all right.
fun, actually. Yeah, so the van was around 70, 80 miles an hour while I was harnessed into the back of it. And
so you got that natural movement.
How do you mean?
So did you do that fast shots, or was that like long exposure?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Sorry, right. No, I've shot from inside a car before and done long exposure. Yeah. It's pretty hard on most English roads because they're too bumpy.
Yeah, I did have a when I was taking pictures out the back of a van as well, I did try quite slow shutter speeds to start with, but they just kept on going out of focus. So I had to ramp up to about 160th, 200th of a second.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So it's a different type of thing altogether. Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So when you're around the track, are you allowed to go... like, literally, anywhere around the outside?
Sort of. I mean, we have to be standing behind the Armco or tyre wall at all times, really. But apart from that, you can go anywhere around the outside.
Right. So it's just, is that just safety sort of thing?
It doesn't really apply at Brands Hatch Indy, but there are things called red zones, which are areas where if you've got trackside accreditation, you're not allowed to go. And there isn't really any at the Indy circuit, but there is at some other circuits, like the GP version of Brands Hatch.
Okay. Yeah, because it's interesting, because obviously photographers are sort of hidden, you know, like if you watch highlights or anything, you never think about the photographers that have been there or the film crew filming stuff, do you? You just think about drivers, don't you? So,
sort of invisible to you.
Yeah, which is quite weird, isn't it? Considering you're there for such a long time. One other quick one then. So, as far as shooting's concerned, are you ever allowed to use flash or lighting or anything like that?
Not for motor racing photography.
Fair. So, it sort of makes sense. I just sort of threw it out there because I assumed it was a stupid thing. But are there any other restrictions then on equipment? You're allowed to have around you, or what you're allowed to wear, colours, or anything weird like that?
There is actually. There is.
Is there? You
can't wear red, green, blue, or yellow clothing, I think, from memory. The reason for that is because drivers could confuse it with a flag. So, apart from that, though, there isn't any other restrictions.
That's interesting. So you just got to think about your colour choice. Okay. So do you stay on for all the parties?
Not at the moment.
You're hoping.
Maybe when I do some motorsport events later this year, I will.
That'd be nice. I mean, do you sort of get involved with any of the drivers, the teams, mechanics, anything like that? Or
not at the track days, no. I mean, I attend the driver's briefing and say hello and sometimes have a quick chat with some of the drivers, but apart from that, you don't really know.
That's fair enough. So, what if it's a wet day? How the hell do you keep dry? Or do you even stay on? What happens then?
On Monday, I was doing a track day, and it had a really heavy rain shower, came out of nowhere, and it was the first time it's actually rained that I've been.
Okay.
So I have got a waterproof covering for my camera, which I put on, and I've got a covering for my bag, but apart from that, I just keep on tuning.
Okay. So it doesn't matter. I mean, what about your hands? If it gets cold?
I wear gloves, but you sort of get used to the cold after a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I put quite a few layers on, depending upon the forecast, but If you get cold,
Would you have to change your direction though? Like, let's say it's wind and rain, because obviously you can't protect your the glass fully, can you? Because otherwise you won't get a shot.
I may have to. I haven't had that happen yet, I have actually at Croft. I went to a rallycross event at Croft at the end of last year, and it was actually a snow blizzard, and the snow was actually going in the direction that I was taking pictures, and it did actually clog up the filter, and I kept on wiping off, but it didn't help, so I did actually have to change my direction then, but I haven't had to do it for a track day.
Right. Okay. I suppose that's the only thing I could think of, because I mean, what else can you do? You can't sit there wiping shot, wipe shot. What can you? Because I've been out in the rain a few times and done a few sort of different street shots and stuff, but it does become hard work. But, you know, I can move around and I can go stand under a shop window or, you know, a building or something.
No.
You don't have a lot of choice, do you?
No, you're just exposed to the rain, really. I mean, you just keep on shooting. Whatever the weather.
And I think I think the thing is, sometimes the weather can make them different shots, can't it?
Yeah, especially with the rain. With some of the cars, they do, I think it's called rooster tail, is it? what comes up from the back of them. Huh. Yeah, which
all right.
can produce an interesting shot. But I haven't shot that many times in the rain yet, though.
Hmm. We've got April showers coming, so you might get it. Well, it's so early for you, though, isn't it? Like you say, if you're... So you started really...
What, end of summer, then? Last year, so... In the middle of summer.
Coming into summer. But then we had a mild winter, really, so...
Yeah.
Hmm. Be interesting to see what it brings. I'd love to see some of your different weather shots. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
I've taken the shots in the snow. That's interesting. I mean, snow, I wouldn't say it presents any opportunities, really. It just gets in the way, really.
Yeah, because I think some of like the main things about motorsport is your panning shots, it's the colour of the car, or sometimes a little spark from an exhaust or whatever, and then seen a few shots like that. Colours. I know we've both talked about Robert Baxter, haven't we? And it's the same with some of his images as well. You select one focal point, so it could just be part of the bike or part of the car. And it's just that little, it's a full frame, but it's literally just like one thing in it. And you've got a lovely one on your website, just like
Which
that.
One's that off?
I think you shot it, I think you've tilted a car at an angle.
Yeah, is that the one of...
It's... you've got it on the portfolio. Oh, yes. It looks like a small Formula 1 car. So is it like a Formula 3 or something?
It's that one.
Yes.
Yes.
Orange one number 4. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that was taken at Brands Hatch down Cooper Strait. And it was taken at about a tenth of a second. About 70 mil.
Wow.
18 to 200. And it took me about 100 shots to get that image. And that was really the only one. And yeah, that if you look in the background,
Jesus,
that's the race control building behind it. Yeah.
All right. So it just shows, doesn't it, if you get the panning right, it produces an amazing effect.
I really like the slow pans in motorsport photography. It's something I'm gonna.
Yeah.
Do a lot more this year in my motorsport. And yeah, I mean, panning takes a lot of practice to get right.
I tried it once, Gabe, and thought, no, crap.
I mean, it's mainly all down to practice, but there are certain things you can do which help increase your hit rate in it. Like, how he stands. So the way that I do it is I have my lower body facing the direction that I want to take a picture, and then turn my upper body to a position where the car's going to enter a frame, and then literally keeping the upper body as still as you can, just turning it so it's pulling the camera around, and I've found that helped
quite a lot.
Also, what focal length you're using, because the higher the focal length you use and the closer you are to the car, the harder it's going to be to get in focus. Yeah. So it's all little things like that which just help improve your panning.
So can you get close enough to do it? Or are you better being away and zooming in a little?
With actual in particular or general?
Just in general, then.
A mixture, really. I mean, I do shots which are where I'm about a good few hundred metres away from a car and try and shoot about a second. But I have also done ones like Druids at Brands Hatch, where you're only about 4 or 5 meters away from a car. And yeah, so it's different ends of the spectrum, really.
That must be quite hard, because surely the closer you are, the more severe the pan is.
The closer you are,
or is it shorter?
The speed of the image. But the closer you are, in a way, it's easier to get it in focus because you're moving at a faster rate, so there's less vertical movement when you're panning. But
definitely something to practice and try.
I would also say that I've been panning for, I've been to pretty much every motorsport event at Brands Hatch in the second half of last season, practicing panning pretty much every time. I still feel I've got quite a lot to improve in. So it just shows you really need a lot of practice to master it.
I think they say that in like most photography, isn't it? It's like do 10,000 shots and then you're ready. I think that's some of these to say in the old days or something. I can't remember how many it was, but I was like, yeah, I can sort of see the point. I think some people have naturally got gifts, and I think people have got the eye, and I think some people are just really good at certain elements.
I mean, some people are probably better than others at panning, because it's at the end of the day, it's down to how smoothly you can put the car in the frame, and the better you can do it, the better you're going to be.
So it probably doesn't suit someone like me who doesn't have that patience, because I'm going to get irritated, I think, if I can't do something. But then, I know that sounds Irish coming from someone who shoots film, because I'm extremely patient in other ways. You know, I can wait 18 months for a film to develop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can get fairly high hit rates with panning. I mean, if you're shooting at about 1/80 of a 100th of a second, depending on the speed of a car and your focal length, you can get a hit rate about 1 in 3 or so. The image which you're referring to, I mean, that's probably the other end of the extreme, of being like a hit rate of 1 in 100.
Yeah, that would cost me a lot of film, mate.
How many images can you take on film? Is it like?
Yeah, I think. You've got 24 or 36, but I shoot medium. So that's only 15. And then obviously the bigger you go, the less you get.
Because I take a good few thousand images a day.
So,
I don't think film will work.
No, I think you'd have to... Not even a millionaire would be able to afford that. You would certainly keep Kodak going, mate. So, yeah. I'm going to message... the film company and say, Andrew's suggesting he takes up film. I think you'd have a direct line to their print, wouldn't you? Jesus. 1,000 a day, that'd be unbelievable. But say, you know, back 30 years ago, I wonder what they did.
Actually, no, that's a good question.
Because, because this is what I think about is, photography's been around since sort of 1900. There was Victorian, there was wet plates and dry plates and stuff, but 40s, 50s, people started getting SLRs. So, you know, with the filmed World Cup, the filmed rallies, F1s for a long, long time. So someone's done it.
That's a good question. I'll have to find out about that. I don't actually know.
Yeah, so you know the guys you aspire to? Yeah. They're current guys, aren't they?
But are any of them really old that may have shot films?
Darren Heath did in his early days. I don't. The other guys didn't. No, because James Bond started about 2012, I think. Yeah.
Ah, yes, there's no chance of that. Yeah, you'd need someone 60 or 70, I'm thinking.
I have to check about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, would it?
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
I guess they probably bought lots of rolls of film.
And it was a lot cheaper than you see. So, but I know, like with weddings, I know someone who used to shoot weddings, and his boss gave him one roll of film for the wedding. Yeah, that's how strict it was. And he maybe have two if he was doing a reception. That's how good they had to be.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's quite scary, isn't it?
I couldn't imagine doing it.
Because obviously... No.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the pressure?
36 shots.
So you... Yeah. Because then your thoughts are on not just shooting how you want. It'd be, is this right? Is this right? You'd be so selective.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I've just seen some of Darren Heath's photos. Oh, my God. Yeah. I can understand why you're inspired to these guys. Some nice wet day ones there.
Darren Heath is just amazing.
Hmm. It's all practice, though. I mean, Jesus Christ. I'll have to send you a link to someone. I've been trying to get on the show as well. I can't pronounce his surname. I think it's something like Maurice Vollimer. I'll send you a link to his work. He's a motorsport photographer too. Tends to have a lot of... red cars, shall we say. I can't remember if it is like German or Austrian, but it's got some fabulous works. It does a lot of classics, and he shoots a little bit of film as well as digital. So
please do send it across.
Yeah, we'll do. So what's your favourite then?
I prefer
cars or motorbikes,
because I've always followed car racing. I mean, I have done some bike photography. Yeah, when I first started.
Yeah, I noticed events, you've done
one
some.
BSB and a club racing event. And I have actually got some bike track days coming up for MSV in the next few weeks. So I'm going to do some practice this weekend.
Okay.
Because there's an event at Brands Hatch. Yes, it should be good.
Is there anything different then as far as shooting's concerned?
Yeah.
With cars over motorbikes?
With bikes, you have to shoot at slightly faster shutter speeds because they move about.
Okay.
And also to bear in mind with bikes.
Right.
The rider is constantly moving on top of the bike. So you have to bear that in mind.
Mm.
And one other small difference is they're smaller in the frame as well, since you can zoom in more.
Mm.
I mean, the other nice thing is all the track days I've done so far have been at Brands Hatch, but next week I'm venturing further, so I'm going to Donington and Setton next few weeks, so I'm looking forward to that. That should be good.
Do you have like a favourite place then on the track, or like a good memory of a shot that you got there?
Yes. At Brands Hatch, I'd say my favourite places are at Druids, which is turn two. Looking downhill, that's one of the classic shots there. I do also quite like the picture where I took that one of the Formula 4 car, which you were talking about earlier. That's quite a good place. Not many people actually use that place, I've noticed. If you ever go to Brands Hatch, you'll barely see any photographers in the picture. But I think for the slow pants in particular, it is actually a pretty good place. It's one of my favourite ones.
I'm just looking at a map of Druid. So
yeah,
is that like a really tight bend then?
Just bring it up there.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's turn two on the circuit.
So how fast can you take that? How fast would a car, say, be going around there?
Coming into it, not particularly quickly. Probably
a little steep.
It depends on the car, but about 80, 100, I would have thought. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. So yeah, it's still fairly
and
fast.
The other place I was talking about earlier is Cooper Strait. That's going from turn 3 to 4 for the common map.
Yeah.
And,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say those are my two favourite places at Brands Hatch. But probably my favourite circuit to shoot at is actually Donington. I went there for the first time earlier this year.
All right.
Just to practice on a track day. And I really enjoyed it, actually. It's a great circuit because it's got the elevation changes at the start of it. And it's a great mixture of different shots you
can get. Okay. Yeah, that would be different, wouldn't it? Because if you can go lower and above, you're going to get well weird angles. So I know I've seen one of Rob's as well, where he's got really low, almost like the I can't remember if it was a bike or a cow. It looked like it was going over him.
Yeah.
I assume he was just zoomed in a lot. I don't know where that was. Yeah. It's all cool, definitely. I noticed on your website you wrote a little guide to panning. I think that's a really nice thing for you to do.
Really, in the off season, and it is about December last year, because there's not much for photographers to do then. So I thought I might give doing a guide to panning a try, and the response I've had back from it's been very positive, actually, on social media. So yeah, I'm glad people like it and myself.
No, that's good. I think that's another positive sign for you, to be honest, because I'm the same. I like to try and help people. So if you learn something, you pass it on, don't you?
I'm doing another one, but I haven't had the time to finish it yet.
Well, like you say, though, if you can do these things in the off-season, I often think if I can get an odd shot here and there of something connected when you're shooting, then you can always write the article later, can't you?
At the end of last season, I did start doing post-fact race event I went to as well. Like rallycross and truck racing. And I was sort of... It's all a description of my time there, really, and sort of giving some advice if people wanted to go to events as well.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'm sort of really getting connected to people that have got this sort of mindset that we can all help each other. Right. I think it's a good thing to do. We're not all blessed in every way, so sometimes we need a little holding hand, don't we? And there's so many different types of photography, it's really easy for someone to say, you just do that. and it's not always that simple for some of us, is it?
To start with, yeah. Definitely helps.
Yeah, I mean, I know in America they're massive on mentoring. Anything to do, I've got this mentor, and it looks like over here you're like, well, really, we don't really have that, do we? And I think one of the problems, I think, with a lot of photographers is their work is secretive, because you don't have any employees or colleagues. You're by yourself. They're trying to earn a living, aren't you?
With some motorsport photographers, most of them don't share the settings that they took their pictures with. But a handful do, like Paula Baxter, who mentioned earlier, also Jenny Price does.
Mm.
But apart from that, I'm not actually aware of any others who do it.
Mm.
So it is all quite secretive.
So, well, I see.
As you say.
Yeah. To me, it's silly because the camera didn't take the shot. So telling me how the camera shot it is irrelevant. It's you know, you put yourself in the position, you've timed it, you know what's going to happen. You adjusted for compensation for light or something, didn't you? Yeah. So I totally hate all this. That's why I like film. You want my EXIF data?
Yeah.
you're not going to get it. But no, that's good. Yeah, I hope you keep going. If you ever get anything, let me know and I'll share it out for you as well. Yeah. Let's talk about equipment, because obviously I know this is a massive thing in wildlife photography and this sort of photography. So what do we need realistically to give us a chance of shooting, Andrew?
A DSLR with a telephoto lens is ideal. Anything 300mm, I would say, would be the minimum max length you need. But really, you can also do photography with even wide angle lens, like 10 to 18 is possible. It really depends on what sort of shot you're after.
Hmm.
I mean, with a 10 to 18, you can do a slow wide angle pan, which can look great. But, and with a telephoto lens, you can do a great action shot with it. So it really depends what you're after. But I'd probably recommend a telephoto lens and probably a wide-angle to mid-range lens as well. Should get you started.
So you're only talking like a standard, what we'd call portrait lens.
That would do to start with. 300. Yeah. I mean, I've got a Sigma 150-600.
Yeah.
Which has got great reach on, which is really handy. And I've also got a Sigma 18-200, which I use for all my wide angle and mid range stuff.
Okay.
And also, I've got a three-legged thing monopod, which I use, which I use which I use with my big lens, the Sigma 1600, and because it's simply too heavy to handheld all the time.
Yeah, so do you handheld most of the time with that then, or is that a tripod?
I handheld with the 18-200.
Can you do that all day?
Well, the 18-200 isn't that heavy. I mean, I've got a 70 mm main body, which is, I think it's about altogether it's about 1.5 kilograms, which it isn't that much. But the 150-600 is quite a heavy lens, and you do really need a monopod to use that.
Yeah. But it's quite normal to handhold and use monopods. It's not a tripod thing.
I've tried a tripod, but they're too restrictive, really. A monopod is what you want.
Yeah. Okay. Right, so as far as the lens is concerned, are we talking high end?
If you want to start, you can just use a budget telephoto lens, but if you want to get more into it, you want something with a low aperture, it's like f2.8, which I'm thinking of getting at some point in the future as well. Because one of the problems with the lens I've got is its minimum aperture is 5.6, which is nice, but it would be nice to have that low depth of field.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is still important to you opened up a
it's
biggest
nice to
champ.
Have another aperture, but it's not essential. I mean, the Canon do a great lens, which is the 100-400, which I think is f4, I believe, which would be a good choice for motorsports. But I can't quite afford it at the moment, so I'm saving up for it.
Yeah. Well, we've all got to start somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah.
So as far as camera body, do you really think it matters full frame, micro, or APS?
Micro four thirds. I mean, the man who was teaching me on my induction day as a track day photographer at MSP used a four thirds camera, and he said it was really good. So you can use four thirds.
Okay.
I prefer the crop frame, mainly because you can get that extended reach on it. I haven't actually used a full frame camera. I would imagine they are a bit better, but disadvantage is you don't get the same reach with the lenses.
Yeah. So do you know what Heath and people like that use?
300mm f2.8.
A 1DX? Oh,
it's one,
that's quite old stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they have massive reputations, don't they?
Also, one other piece of equipment that's worth getting is ND filters. Because to achieve a slow shutter speeds,
you
really need an ND filter, because on a bright sunny day, or maybe even a cloudy day, you can't get a low enough exposure to get shutter speeds of about 30th or 40th per second. So ND filters help.
Of course, yeah, because it's just too bright, so you can't shoot slow enough. How's the sort of your focus in there? Is it okay?
I mean, the ones I've got some Gobe ones, which are pretty good. I've got from one to three stops. At three stops, it can be a bit of a problem on a cloudy day, but I rarely use that one, really. I mean, a one to two stop ND filter is
Did you choose the Canon then over, say, Nikon or Fuji?
The reason I'm with Canon really is because I started with Canon because my dad gave me his old Canon camera. I've been with him ever since, really, so that's why, really.
But,
I mean, I've used a Nikon once at college. It's which was pretty good. I think it was a D40. One of the budget
D40. Okay.
Yes. Just because I've always been with them. I mean, they're great cameras, really. I mean, the choice of lens is huge. Yeah, I'm very happy with one I've got at the moment. So yeah.
No, that's good. Because I know some people are a bit too sort of silly and fascist about brands. And to me, it's like, same as you. You know, if you've started with something, then
I mean,
you might as well just keep going. It's not going to be that much different.
Your old equipment as well, which you could sell, but it's cheaper, really, just to stay with the same brand and just use all your old stuff.
Yeah, totally. I'm all for that. I think that's where what we've been saying, one of the biggest problems with mirrorless is they are forcing the price of old lenses up now.
How are they?
The price of old lenses. Yeah, because all those people that are still shooting film, we can't afford to buy a lot of the film lenses because mirrorless users can now adapt them to use anything. Yeah, so I bought an Olympus mirrorless, and when I started looking at adapters, I mean, I've put full frame Nikon on it, I've put Canon on it, you can do Leica mount, M42 mount, Olympus OM mounts. I've literally had every brand on that camera. And so obviously it's been great for the people like me that don't have a lot of money. We can use old stuff, but yeah, it's sort of, you know, forcing these prices up a little bit because everyone wants good glass. But it's great starting out. There's a lot of weird old lenses out there. There's some great Russian lenses that aren't perfect.
At the end of the day,
get unique effects.
Will last forever, really. I mean, in like 20 years' time, you can still use lenses with a US camera, but the cameras will go out of date, right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, my digital camera is a Nikon D200, so that's not much far off what you were using.
Right.
It's about 13 years old, and that's my main digital camera now. And it takes fabulous photos, and I luckily had two professional lenses with it that I'd got off someone. I mean, one of them I sold, and it still went for like £350.
Yeah.
And that was over 10 years old. And it's just a phenomenal. And second one was like a 2870. And that finally packed up last year. So at the minute I've got it in a couple of pieces, in the hope I could get it fixed for a reasonable fee.
Well, folks, that's the end of another show. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed making it. It's always great to have a guest on with me. Please do share the post and podcast show as much as you can where relevant. If you have time, please do not forget to review this on iTunes. Just hit the review button and give it 5 stars, please. It's always helpful. It's motivation for me to keep the show going, and I want to keep this going for as long as possible. And basically, I'd like to get lots of different and interesting people on here. So that's what I'm trying to do. Thank you again, and see you next time. Bye.